Moncrief on News Talk.
When the United States was negotiating its withdrawal from the Vietnam War, President Nixon instructed his negotiator, Henry Kissinger, to imply to the Vietnamese that Nixon was crazy and there was no telling what he might do if he didn't get his way. This gave birth in political science to what's known as the madman theory. If the other side think you're deranged, they will be more inclined to give in to your demands. Yes, it's really difficult to think of any modern parallels in international politics. Michael Dench is Professor of Political Science at the University of Notre Dame. Afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon.
The madman theory, it always struck me that it wasn't really a theory, just kind of a strategy that Nixon employed in one particular situation.
Well, I don't think Richard Nixon is a great theorist. And so for him, it was a tactic or, you know, a strategy. But, you know, if you go back and read The Strategy of Conflict by the Harvard Nobel laureate economist Thomas Schelling, there's actually a lot of theorizing about how you make threats credible, and particularly in the context of conflicts between two nuclear powers. You know, Schelling shows that what he called the manipulation of risk turns out to be the only way you can sort of break the logjam of mutual assured destruction. So there is some pretty deep theoretical support behind it.
Yeah. So and which could be paraphrased as the other side might be just mad enough to do this.
Yeah, exactly right. Or that you're trying to establish that you might be crazy enough to do it. And in fact, you see that, walking up to the brink of crisis and disaster in a lot of human relations, you know, whether on the street corner or in international politics.
Yeah. So while Nixon mightn't have been much of a political theorist, are you arguing that Donald Trump is, and that he's read the work of Thomas Schelling?
I would never be so bold as to claim that. For me, I have much more respect for Richard Nixon as a consistent thinker about geopolitics than I do about President Trump. I think, you know, President Nixon, and, you know, he's sort of inseparable from his national security advisor and later Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, had a theory of statecraft that the madman theory or strategy was an inextricable part of. So, you know, I think it was pretty well thought out in terms of what Nixon hoped to get from it, even if in the negotiations with the North Vietnamese at the Paris peace talks, it didn't turn out to be fully successful. On the other hand, I think the current president of the United States is a practitioner of the madman theory, or at least the strategic use of chaos. But it's not clear to me that he has the longer-term vision of an outcome that Nixon and Kissinger had. So, no, I don't think that he read Schelling, and no, I don't think he is the most astute practitioner of the madman theory, although he's certainly in the running for being the most prolific employer of it.
And this may well be a key difference, that Nixon's instruction to Kissinger was, you convince them that I'm crazy.
Right.
So it was thought out, he knew what he was doing, whereas in the case of Donald Trump, he's not pretending.
No, he's, you know, I think he's what I call in other contexts, America's first postmodern president. I mean, I think he just, he lives in a world of chaos. This has characterized his business and his entertainment careers before becoming president. And he's, you know, in a way playing true to form, but also in a way, you know, that's different from Nixon, in that whatever you think of Nixon, you know, he thought about the American national interest in a collective way, you know, in terms of how he thought about foreign policy. I think the difference with President Trump is that it all comes down to what's good for him personally. You know, he doesn't seem to have anywhere, you know, the same sense of thinking about this as what's good for America. Or, you know, he would probably say, if he were on the call, what's good for me is good for America, which I think is a comforting, but not always or even very often true about strategic decision making.
Yeah, but could one argue that there's the big gulf here is how Donald Trump perceives himself and how others perceive Donald Trump? The way Donald Trump perceives himself is that it's all the art of the deal, a book he never wrote, and that he's this shrewd business negotiator and he's been able to use those skills, in inverted commas, whilst dealing with the rest of the world. But the rest of the world regards Donald Trump as a toddler with a machine gun, and therefore they kind of do indulge him, and he thinks that's because he's such a shrewd negotiator.
Right. And also, you know, he's sort of made clear that you know, flattery, you know, will get you a long way with him, you know, which isn't contradictory to what you said. But I think it's, you know, a part and parcel of the fact that, you know, what seems to drive President Trump is President Trump. And, you know, I mean, a lot of big political figures over history, you know, have thought that what's good for them has been good for their larger societies. But I think President Trump has taken that to a new level, in my judgment.
Does that really mean, though, do you think, Mike, that there's no end game in here, that he doesn't have a picture in his mind of what America will look like when he's succeeded, or what the world will look like when he's succeeded, given that it seems to change?
Yeah, I think I would put it a little bit differently. I think there are, you know, two problems. One, in the short term, and this, you know, the President Trump, I think, like many American politicians, you know, tends to be subject to the tyranny of the short term. And so, you know, a quick victory is desirable, but there aren't many enduring, you know, quick victories, you know, that will survive over the longer term. And I think secondly, and maybe I'm just sort of a naive idealist, but I think leadership is about leading to the benefit of everybody, not to the individual. And if I had a major critique of President Trump, is I think, you know, that it's ultimately about him.
Yeah, though at the same time, he must be aware, he is aware that there is a voting base that he has to keep moderately happy for some of the time. And so he has to kind of demonstrate to them, oh, look, I'm making your life better.
Yeah. Although, you know, I think part of the Trump coalition in both 2016 and then again in 2024 was sort of voting on their interest, or what they perceived to be their interest. But I think there's also, especially within the MAGA movement itself, also a politics of symbolism. which takes us out of the realm of, traditional nuts and bolts politics and puts us into the postmodern world, as I was saying before. So I don't think we can reduce this strictly to, my American politics, political science colleagues, sort of rational models of politics. I don't think they ever worked very well. But, the Trump administration exposed their limited utility, shall we say, in a major way.
So within the MAGA movement, how does that work then, where the price of eggs is extremely important and then suddenly the price of eggs is irrelevant?
Right. Or, the crisis de jure is this really heated discussion about the Attorney General's decision not to release the Jeffrey Epstein files. Epstein, for a lot of the MAGA people, was sort of the poster child for how corrupt establishment politics had become in the United States. And I happen to agree with a lot of those people on that. But for whatever reason, the Attorney General, backed up by the president, has decided, that's not so important now. And that is causing a lot of heartburn, I think, within the movement. Now, I don't know, maybe there was just no there, and the Attorney General and the president's decision made sense. But in terms of, one of the big symbolic elements of the MAGA movement, it was a huge disappointment.
Michael Desch is a professor of political science at the University of Notre Dame. Michael, thank you very much.
My great pleasure, Sean.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.